ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Now reading from the 6th canto, chapter 12, text 8. Lokah sapala yasye me shvasanti vivashavashe dvija ivashcha baddha sakala iha karanam. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. All living beings in all the planets of this universe, including the presiding deities of all the planets, are fully under the control of the Lord. They work like birds caught in a net who cannot move independently. The difference between the suras and the asuras is that the suras know that nothing can happen without the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas the asuras cannot understand the supreme will of the Lord. In this fight, Vritrasura is actually the sura, whereas Indra is the asura. No one can act independently, rather everyone acts under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, victory and defeat come according to the results of one's karma, and the judgment is given by the Supreme Lord, Karmana Daiva Netrena. Since we act under the control of the Supreme according to our karma, no one is independent from Brahma down to the insignificant ant. Whether we are defeated or victorious, the Supreme Lord is always victorious because everyone acts under His directions. Krishna. In the beginning, I would like to beg the blessings of all the senior devotees who are seated here. I don't have any qualifications to speak, nor do I have any much realizations actually on the Bhagavatam. But I have given this service, so I speak purely for my own purification. Hare Krishna. So, in this purport, Prabhupada is in one statement saying that Vritrasura is actually the sura, whereas Indra is the asura. Now, actually, we can see that Indra is supposed to be the sura. He is the demigod. And Vritrasura is supposed to be the asura. But here Srila Prabhupada is saying just the opposite. He is saying Vritrasura is the sura and Indra is the asura. Why like that? So actually, we can see everything from different perspectives. So when you see from the perspective of pure devotional service, then we can actually see things differently. From pure devotional point of view, pious and impious, both activities are sinful. Why? Because, you know, of this basic problem that it is against the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What does the Lord expect from all the living entities? To give up selfishness and to be engaged in pure devotional service. So, a person who knows this and is actually trying to act according to this principle of trying to develop selflessness is actually on the path of fulfilling the will of the Supreme Lord. So here we can see that Vritrasura externally, even though externally, is acting like a demon, a rakshas with, you know, big body and ferocious teeth and horrible looking external features. But he is actually a sura. Why? Because he is fulfilling the purpose and the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So just like in yesterday's class, Gaurang Prabhu was explaining that how from this example of Vritrasura, we can actually get an example of how failures can be a stepping stone to success and success can be a slipping stone to failures. So it's a fact, and here another example can be used of Vritrasura, that how Vritrasura is an excellent example for a person who is so amazingly and fantastically managing his stress. So it's an example of stress management. So if anyone is stressed in life, or then we give, you know, stress management seminars to people and companies and things like that, students, this example can be used of Vritrasura. Why? Because you see that in the most difficult time of one's life, what is that basically? Death, isn't it? For a materialist, you know, death is the culmination of all the miseries of life. Because all his hopes for enjoyment are going to come to an end. All his, you know, his plans of happy family life and amassed enjoyment of his amassed properties and everything, all his plans that he's making is completely destroyed at the time of death. It's a completely hopeless situation at the time of death. Completely hopeless for a materialist. But we can see here, Vritrasura is an example where he's convinced and he has full faith that victory is not going to be at his side. He's convinced about it. He's going to die for sure. And Indra also knows for sure that he is going to be successful. He knows. But the fact that we see is, in this pastime, that Vritrasura is stress-free, he's completely in bliss, and he's heroic, and he's telling Indra, come on, pick up your thunderbolt and fight with me. You are supposed to win, I am supposed to lose. And he's in bliss. And Indra, who knows that he's going to win, is in misery. He's in stress. He's nervous, and his hands are shaking, and his thunderbolt is lying beside him, but he's not having faith that, you know, it will work or not. So we see from this example that peace of mind and, you know, happiness and bliss and all these things is actually not a function of our external circumstances. Even so much that, so much of the fact that even if a person is about to lose something so precious, such as a battle, you know, it can be a source of great bliss, just if one is fixed in the right consciousness. And what is the right consciousness? Right consciousness is to lead one's life along devotional principles, to surrender to Krishna, to not be attached to the fruits, to not be attached to the success or failures, but to just perform one's duty simply as a duty, as an offering, as a devotional offering to Krishna. That's all. Success, failures, it's not in our hands. Why should we bother about it? So this is the consciousness of Vritrasura. Why? Because the moment you're attached to success or failure, it's the problem. Because as in the previous verse it is explained, yuyutsatam kutrajit atatayena jaya sadai katra nayat paramatmanah. So it is explained that yuyutsatam, in the battlefield, the platform of success, always to be successful in battle or in any endeavor, is a position reserved exclusively for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Only the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be always victorious. That is not for the living entities. He has to face failures. So if he is attached to this office, to his failures, or for that matter, if he is attached to success, to the degree he is attached to success, when he fails, he will be miserable. And failure is certainly going to happen. It's the way of life. It's explained here. Jaya sadai katra navai paratmanam. It's not for the conditioned souls to be always successful. He's bound to be, you know, he's bound to fail, basically. And if you say, you know, well, you know, why don't you take up devotion? So just see how miserable you are. You're always, you know, suffering because of all these failures in your life. So no, no, no. Everyone is failing. So what? So people somehow take consolation that everyone is failing. So, you know, misery loves company. And that's how they keep themselves pacified. But that is not the real way of actually becoming blissful. Real bliss comes from actually doing things in the mood of an offering of devotional service. So when there is success, we offer it to Krishna. Say, Krishna, this is yours. And when there is failures, that also you offer to Krishna. Say, Krishna, this is also yours. That's it. What can we do? Our only purpose is to just work in the mood of sincerity and trying to give our best. We do our best and leave the rest. That's all. And in this consciousness, as an offering of love to the Supreme Lord, there is great happiness and there is great bliss. It can be experienced by anyone, even a neophyte devotee who is actually practicing Krishna consciousness. The bliss that one gets in serving in the movement of Srila Prabhupada is so far greater that he can so easily give up all those lower kind of pleasures. So easily. Why? Just because of tasting this sweetness of doing the service, not with a fruitive mentality, not for gain or loss, but just as an offering. Simply for the pleasure of the Lord, for the pleasure of the devotees. And, there are examples, just like, you know, there is a very famous singer, Anoop Jalota. You know, he came to perform in the Juhu temple, one of the bhajan singers and all. He himself said personally to the devotees that I perform in many shows and many performances, but actually the bliss that I receive in performing for Krishna directly here is really incomparable. I feel so much of bliss and so much of satisfaction when I perform for the Lord. Why? Because here when I'm singing, I'm not singing for, you know, receiving any praises. I'm not singing for, you know, so that people will appreciate me or they will, you know. I'm not afraid of loss. I'm not afraid of losing my reputation. So I'm really happy here. So this is the realization of a person who just renders a little bit of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We can see that. The experience of people. As I was speaking in Mira Road Temple, one example of what an article had come in the Times magazine about how even researchers and psychologists are actually come to realize that happiness is not a function of economic development. They are now very much, in fact, there was an 8-point solution for boosting happiness. What are the happiness boosters? You know, presented by not devotees, but psychologists and scientists. What are they saying? They are saying, thank a mentor. Count your blessings. Have religious faith. And develop effective, happy relationships with devotees. Well, not with devotees, sorry. With people, with friends. And they say, one of the very important aspects of happiness is a strong religious faith. But their conclusion is they are not very sure whether it is a God element or the relationship element between the communities that is the happiness booster. But they say that religious faith is a major booster. Like, you know, one of the devotees in Mira Road was telling that he was coming from Holland. And Holland is, as you may be knowing, one of the richest countries in the world. But unfortunately, the people of Holland are not happy. They're miserable. So much so that the government is taking drastic action to counteract this problem, the society problem, the mass social problem of depression and stress. People are having so many social resources available, parks and all the facilities that anyone probably in India who's aspiring to go to the West, maybe, you know, aspiring for, they have it all, but they're miserable. So the government has made ISKCON Holland as one of the official centers for giving moral and ethical spiritual training to the people of Holland. Of everyone has to go through this kind of ethical and moral training. You see that? But the researchers had plotted a graph, you know,
They have a method of evaluating happiness, stress, depression. You know, they go around with to people asking, you know, are you happy? And they have a way of evaluating and putting a, trying to make an objective analysis of subject to subject like happiness. And to some extent, they are successful. So they come out with a scale, and they plotted that scale on a graph. Y-axis, they plotted happiness. X-axis, they plotted gross domestic product. And they found that there were countries who are wealthy, they were happy. Countries who are not wealthy, they were happy, they were miserable. So they find that there are countries who are having very high GDP and they are happy and they are miserable. And countries they are having low GDP, they are happy and they are miserable. And they are confused. What does that mean? That means GDP or economic development is not an indicator of happiness. It has got no relationship with happiness. It's got no relationship. So they conclude that money is not the factor. It will not protect you from stress and depression and all these problems. So what is the solution? That they don't know. And therefore, you know, there are certain countries in the world who are reconsidering whether we should really define the progress of a country on the basis of the gross domestic product or the gross national product. Because it's not an indicator, a true indicator of a development of a country. Because ultimately, what do people want? People just want to be happy. But they're seeing that you have a very high soaring GDP, like something like Japan or, you know, it explained that from 1960s to 1980s, the economic development of Japan was on the path of a rocket flight. But the people there were miserable. What does it indicate? It is not a true indication of happiness. So now there are countries like, you know, some countries are there, even UK for that matter, and some countries like Bhutan, trying to redefine the development or the progress of a country on the basis of the cross-national happiness, not on cross-national product. You can see that. So certainly, researchers have to go through a long, you know, process in order to come to this conclusion when we already have this direct evidence from the Shastras that who can be peaceful? Someone like Vritrasura, who is a demon. Externally, but internally, he's a devotee. Another thing which we can learn from this pastime is that how we should be very careful in judging someone. Because from all external aspects, Vritrasura looks like a person who sincerely needs to be condemned. He's a demon. He's a rakshas. He's going all out and killing all the demigods. Certainly no one on earth at that time in the planet could have ever, you know, had any doubts that probably he is a devotee. Till he spoke and, you know, his glories were revealed. So very good lesson that we can learn from this pastime is to not be judgmental of anyone. Even if a person is, you know, representing or manifesting qualities like Vritrasura, even if he's a demon like Vritrasura, we cannot judge someone. Because the nature of judgment is that it will give us the result of what we desire. If we desire to find good qualities, our judgment will give us a result. Wow, excellent, this person is fantastic. And we have envy towards someone and we want to judge him, then we can find out bad qualities. Like there is a wonderful pastime in the Krishna book of how Kashiraj, you know, the associate of Paundrak. Paundrak, he used to consider himself as Vasudev, Krishna. But unfortunately for him, the real Krishna was present. So he thought, how can I exist when the real one is present? I mean, he sincerely believed that he was Krishna. Now, how can anyone believe and be thoroughly convinced that he is Krishna? Srimad Bhagavatam explains bad association. If you are in bad association, Bhagavatam says, then you can be convinced of anything, even up to the point of thinking that you are God. And he actually believed it. So he challenged Krishna. He says, Krishna, fight with me. You are not Krishna, you are not Vasudev, I am Vasudev, so give up all your symbols, give up all your, you know, Shankh, Chakra, Gada, Padma, and surrender to me. Give up your chakra. Krishna heard it. He said, certainly I'll give it up. I'll give it up on your throat. Your throat will be sliced and jackals will be eating your body. That is when I will be giving up my chakra. Certainly I will give it up. We'll meet on the battlefront. They met. And Pondrak was with, you know, four hands, artificial hands he had stuck up. And he was wearing a mukut and Kaustubha jewel, and his body was probably also painted in order to... He was exactly like Krishna. And Krishna looked at him and had a hearty laugh. All the people on the side of Krishna. Oh my, look at this fool. And Krishna killed him. And along with him, Kashiraj. Now Kashiraj, it is very amazing that his head was chopped off, but his head didn't fall to the ground there. It was taken far off distance to Kashi, where Kashiraj had promised to his wives that, don't worry, I will get the head of Krishna today and I will drop it in your compound. And the head fell. And all the wives thought this is probably Krishna's head. But when they saw closely, they found it was their own husband's head. Amongst those people who were lamenting were Kashiraj's children. So the children felt so disgusted with Krishna that they thought they should take revenge. So they performed a yajna, and Lord Shiva appeared. Shiva told them that you perform this particular yajna, the Dakshinagni, worship Dakshinagni, he will be pleased and he will give you the benediction, whom you can send towards that person who will be inimical towards the Brahmanas. So the sons of Kashiraj, they started performing the tapasya, the sacrifices, the yajnas. Now it is surprising, when Lord Shiva appeared to them and told them that, look, you must send this demon to kill that person who is inimical to the Brahmanas. This was explicitly indicated to them that if you send to Krishna, then you will be in trouble because you will only be killed. Because the power of Tantra Vidya, because that is like, you know, a sacrifice which was in the lower modes. It was not a sacrifice in the mode of goodness. It was a low class yajna where you use for killing people. That if it is not successful, then that effect is reversed and it comes back on us. If you throw a spell on others, if it doesn't work, then it comes back and kills us. But still these boys, they went ahead and performed a sacrifice. Why? Question. Couldn't they see that Krishna is Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. He's glorified as a person who is actually the well-wisher of the Brahmanas, the well-wisher of the Vaishnavas, the well-wisher of the cows. Then why? Why did they do that? So the Acharyas comment, because they were so convinced that Krishna was not the well-wisher of the Brahmanas. The Brahmanas were glorifying him and he was doing all those charities only because he wanted praises from these Brahmanas. He was actually in his heart inimical to the Brahmanas, but he was just doing all those external things so that he can just get some name, fame and prestige. But in his heart, he's inimical to the Brahmanas. So he was convinced. They were convinced about it. So they went ahead and performed the sacrifice. So this is a proof that if one becomes judgmental with the intention of exploitation, then one can actually get the result of seeing actually faults in a person who is faultless. Someone like Krishna, who is faultless. Someone like Shishupal could find not one, not two, not 10, 20, but 100. And probably if Krishna would not have killed him, then he would have found millions. Now, does Krishna have faults? No, he is faultless. He is completely pure. He is Shuddham, Apapa Vidham. Someone who chants his names becomes pure. How can there be impurities within him? But still, Shishupal could find faults with him. So therefore, we can see from this pastime of Rudrasur that how one should be very careful in order to see devotees in the right light, or to see anyone in fact in the right light. Why just devotees? Like for example, Dhruva Maharaj. Now his stepmother did not have the slightest inkling about his devotional qualities, that he will go ahead and become a pure devotee. And he was a 5-year-old boy. What can a 5-year-old boy know about tapasya and pleasing Lord Vishnu? She insulted him. And Dhruva Maharaj, he went in the forest, pleased Lord Vishnu, in 6 months he's back, he's a pure devotee. But because of that offense to Dhruva Maharaj, Suruchi lost her son as an offense, as a. So we can see that when we, when one is actually casting such discriminatory judgments towards someone and who happens actually to be pure, then it actually comes back. As this pastime of Kashi Raj goes, that these sons performed a sacrifice, and from the sacrifice this great demon appeared. It is described his legs were so tall, it was as tall as a palm tree, and went towards Dwarka. And all the Dwarkavasis were so afraid. They went to Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, please help. This demon is coming. He's destroying all the four directions. Please help us. So at that time, Krishna was playing a gambling match. He was in a chess match. And he just laughed. He didn't want to be disturbed. So he just summoned his Sudarshan Chakra. He said, please do the job. Sudarshan Chakra went and drove away this demon. So the demon became so afraid, he turned around, went back to Kashi and destroyed all of Kashi Raj's sons along with all the Brahmanas who were performing the sacrifice. They were completely destroyed. So here we can know that how Indra, who is so-called dressed up as a devotee, as a very disciplined and very gentleman, is actually is rogue. But who is a devotee? He is Dhritarashtra. He is a gentleman. Though externally he is performing all these abominable activities. So we can know. So we can understand that externals are not so important, but the internals is important. So we can see that the Acharya has explained that there are certain qualities which are indicators of someone who is a devotee. Like he's poetic and he's got good qualities and all those things. So the Acharya has explained. They are all tatashta lakshana. They are all peripheral or subordinate qualities to the one main swarup lakshana. Main principle quality of someone, of a devotee, is that he is surrendered to Krishna. That is the swarup lakshana, the most important quality of a person. How he should be judged is that he has surrendered to Krishna. Rest, everything may follow. It's not as important as this main quality, that a person is surrendered to Krishna. So, we can see so many such examples. People who have manifested such qualities of, bad externals, but very surrendered consciousness. We can see so many such examples. Recently we were discussing about Jabali in the assembly hall of Lord Ram when he was banished to the forest. Jabali came to Lord Ram and he said, look, you should not go to the forest. Lord Ram said, why not? Because ultimately, what is life meant for? Dharma, artha, kama and moksha. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. If you're following religion, it should lead to what? It should artha. And artha should lead to calm. But you are not going to get any calm. You are going to be miserable going to the forest. So what is the use of going to the forest? Just forget it. Just be into the kingdom. Rule Ayodhya. Rule the world. Be happy. Ultimately all these rules and regulations, they're all nonsense. Ultimately they've all been made by some man. Some human being has made all these rules. People say that it has been made by God. Who has seen God? Has anyone seen God? No. Now he's telling this atheistic philosophy to Lord Ram, who's standing in front of him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Lord Ram is looking at him speak, and he's thinking, So Jabali is speaking atheistic scientific philosophy. Everything has come by chance. Everything's coming from chemicals. So scientists cannot actually take any credit for even this philosophy. Because this has been spoken by Jabali millions of years ago. Because scientists claim to take, prestige for such a philosophy like chance theory. Prabhupada would say, what? Life came from chemicals? Something dead like chemicals is bringing life? Where do you see it in this nature? that dead things are coming back to life. You find that in nature? You find dead things coming back to life, or you find living things die? You find living things are dying. You never find dead things coming back to life. What kind of philosophy is this? Bogus. So Jabali was speaking this bogus philosophy. And Lord Ram became very angry on him externally. What are you speaking? If these rules and regulations thrown out of the window, then what do you think will happen to the general populace? There will be chaos, anarchy in the society. Everyone will do what they want to do, and there will be complete chaos in the society. And he became very angry externally on Jabali, but in his heart of hearts, he was embracing Jabali for his love and affection. And all the other assembly members come in front of Lord Ram and they say, please, please, don't chastise Jabali. Because ultimately, he's a devotee. He doesn't believe in what he's saying. He ultimately desires that you come back. Don't go to the forest. Just be here. Just rule the kingdom. Going to the forest will break everyone's heart. Nothing good can come from you going to the forest. Just be here. So what is important is the main quality of surrender to Krishna, the motivation. So we can safely conclude that it is simply, if not solely, the motivation or surrender to Krishna which determines our advancement in Krishna consciousness. But does that mean that we can just, take it easy and be lax in developing all these external qualities? No. We have seen that those people who have developed external qualities and not having internal qualities have been ridiculed. As we can see, the Rom Harishan Sutta, a famous example, is speaking Bhagavatam. And Lord Balaram came and he said, Rishibir Bhauda Gitam. What did he say? Rishir Bhagavato Bhutva Shishyo Ditya Bahunicha. Sedihasa Puranani Dharma Shastrani Sarvashaha. That you are a disciple of a great sage Vyasadev and you have read all this Dharma, Shastra, Itihasas, Puranas and everything. But Adantasya Vinitasya Vritha Pandita Maninaha. But you are actually Adantasya, you have not controlled your senses. Avinitasya, you are not humble enough. Vritha Pandita Maninaha, and you have assumed yourself to be a great scholar. So you are Natasyeva Ajitatmana. You are not controlled your mind. Ajitatmanaha. You have not managed to control your mind. So what are you? Natasye. You are just an actor. You're just acting. That's all. Speaking Bhagavat, but you are actually not having any real substance in your heart. You're simply an actor. So for this, you desire to be killed. You desire to die. And then he takes a grass and he kills him. He was not an asura. He was in fact empowered. He had received the blessings of all the Vaishnavas and he had received the blessings of Vyasadeva and all the other great sages to actually speak Bhagavad philosophy. But Lord Balaram showed that these things are important. Even though we may develop externals, you don't have internals, it's condemned. You want to speak of someone who has developed neither of those two, neither internals nor the externals. You think, I don't have externals, so what? External is not important, internal is important, I'll develop internal. That is true, but do we really have that quality of surrender to say that, I have developed the internal qualities? No, we have not. Certainly, we can depend on the mercy of the Lord. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the incarnation of mercy, there's no doubt about it. And he has delivered people like Jagai and Madhai who had no external, no internal. And we can safely conclude, we are actually followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That is true. Certainly he will. But still there are conditions. Conditions apply. Just like any billboard you see. Like someone was saying, a motorcycle is available for what? Like a man wanted to sell his second-hand motorcycles. Motorcycle is available for 50 rupees. But conditions apply. What? You have to purchase a cat along with it. And the cat costs around 25,000 rupees. So you have to purchase the cat, pay 25,000 and then... So this stunt is used even by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is also an expert advertiser. So he is saying that, my mercy is available, but conditions apply. What are those conditions? Jagai Madhai never offended anyone. It is explicitly mentioned by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. by Srila Prabhupada, that Jagai Madai had all the faults, but they had one quality, that they never offended devotees. That is a condition, certainly. Yeah, it has to be considered. Something like Amoga, who had no external qualities, he had no internal qualities. He was so envious of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come to the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and Amoga would be standing there waiting to see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is eating. And then you would see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu being served large quantities of prasadam, and Amoga would say, just see this sense enjoyer. Just see how he's not following the rules and regulations of sannyas. He's eating so much. He's a rogue. He's not a sannyasi. He's not fit to be. And he would offend. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya present there would be so angry. And he would run with a stick in his hand to beat Amoga and would drive him out of his house. And he would even curse Amoga that let him die. Let my son-in-law die. Let my daughter become a widow. So he was so angry with Amoga. And Amoga, because of his offenses, he got cholera. He was down with cholera. He was on his verge of death. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes there and he says, Amoga, why have you allowed your heart, which is a seat of Krishna, which is the residence of Krishna, why have you allowed your heart to be the residence of envy? Give up your envy and just, surrender to Krishna. Give up your envy. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu touched his chest like this. And just by touching his chest, he became completely purged of all his anarthas. He completely shed tears of joy and ecstasy of love of Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and surrendered and he became a pure devotee. So we saw that how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him the mercy. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why did you do this? Why did you give such a sinful man your mercy? He should have died for his offenses. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no. How can I do that to him? He's connected to you. And anyone who's connected to you has to receive my mercy. So this is the qualification. Just by being connected to a devotee has to receive my mercy. So this is a very important principle. So still the externals are important. This is certainly no doubt about it. Like we can see in Chota Haridas principle that how he was, slack a little in on his following his principles and he was banished from the association. So the mercy is available, but again subject to conditions. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, just chant Hare Krishna. That's all, but don't commit offenses. Just these two things and I'll give you my mercy. So if one may not be freed from the offenses, but if one is just sincerely endeavoring to achieve this position, then one is certainly assured of victory, assured of success, of receiving the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the process is so simple, as Srila Prabhupada has given to all of us. Just to chant Hare Krishna, that's all. And just by chanting, we can be freed. And Srila Prabhupada has so mercifully distributed to the whole world this chanting of Hare Krishna, which not many people had faith, but Srila Prabhupada had faith. While I was, conducting one japa session with the boys in Somaya hostel. So one of the boys, he was telling, what is this japa and all that? I thought you all are having meditation circles. I thought you will be doing some dhyana or something like that. I want to do dhyana. I said, so never mind. We told him, come, just chant. We'll teach you the dhyana also. Come. So he came and he said, chant like this. So he was not chanting. He was keeping the mala and he was doing dhyana. Or he was holding the mala in his hand and he was doing dhyana. So people tend to reject this process thinking that it is too simple. That is the problem. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given this simple process. But people make a mistake of thinking that if it is so simple, it cannot be powerful. But it is not true. Something which is so simple need not be, ineffective. Not true. Just like Sridhar Maharaj, once he was telling that the fundamentals of a computer is very simple. What are the fundamentals of a computer? 0 and 1. There's two states, 0, 1. Simple, but a computer can solve advanced functions like number crunching and data processing and all those possible only through the basic two fundamental elements, 0 and 1. That's two simple fundamentals. But the outcome, very powerful. So similarly, the chanting of the Hare Krishna is just 3 words, not 2, 3. That's also simple. Hare Krishna and Ram. Just chant, the effect is enormous. So if you don't want to accept these three, then you have to accept four. What is that? Birth, old age, disease and death. That's it. So that's simple. And we can see that. That it is not dhyan. Dhyan is recommended for satyuga. Satya dhyayato Vishnu. And tretayam yajato makhe. It is only for those people who are in the, you know, in the satyuga, who could actually concentrate and do all those things. It's not for us. But it is bhakti yoga, which is so simple. So it is not the, it is not like, you know, just like a student who goes to the examination hall, very brilliant student. He's cracked all the examination papers and passed of the past and he's solved everything. He's ready for a very tough question. And then when he gets the question paper and he sees a very simple throwaway 30 mark question, all the people are rejoicing. Wow, throwaway question. Excellent. Wow, 30 marks is throwaway. We have got it. And this person who's very intellectual and he's scratching his head, he's thinking, how can it be so simple? I think there is some catch in this. And he gives up that and he solves the more difficult questions, thinking that probably is some, you know, problem in this. Why? Because he's so complex, he cannot think that something can be so simple. And we may miss. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada says, Krishna consciousness is so simple, but be careful, you may miss it. Be careful, it's simple, don't miss it. So it's simple for the simple, complex for the complex. So it's that simple. Just chant Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. And all the success can be achieved. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, aur Bhaktavrinda ki jai, Kaut Premanande, Hare Hare. Sorry, there's no time for comments, or sorry, any questions. So, Hare Krishna.